This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. My name is Rich Bradbury and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bites. I'm in the studio with Frida Liu and Audrey Raj. Hello. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
How was the weekend?
Very good, thanks.
Very good. You've already been on air, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to ask Audrey first.
I'm motivated already.
Motivated Monday. Audrey, how was yours?
Pretty restful.
Pretty nice. Restful. Mm. Just lots of snoring and sleeping and all that
yes.
kind of. Nice.
Yes, exactly that.
Okay. If you want to get in touch with the show this afternoon, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number. And if you want to get in touch via Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. Why are you giggling, Frida? What's going
on? Because Audrey's first story is not very motivational.
It's not at all. The stories we've got kicking us off will be about 7-Eleven and how a collapse is sending a bit of a warning to some of its investors, right?
Yep.
This is on the back after just a couple of weeks ago, we were speaking about how involved Lazada were getting with 7-Eleven here in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Over in Indonesia, though, a bit of a different story, right?
Yeah, so, you know, 7-Eleven is still, after, what, 90 years in business, is still expanding in various countries around the world. But there will be no more 7-Elevens in Indonesia starting this Friday.
What?
How does this happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the name that everyone knows.
It's the only convenience store I can think of the top of my head.
Yes, yeah. Bureaucracy.
Yeah, true.
So the holder of the franchise in the country, PT Modern International, says limited resources had forced its closure. This involves more than 160 outlets, mostly based in Jakarta. It should be noted that the U.S. convenience store chain, which has, like I said earlier, has been around for like 90 years, only started business in Indonesia in the year 2009. So they've only actually been in business in Indonesia for about 8 years now. And when it started, it looked like a success story as they banked on this hangout culture of young Indonesians. So the stores stayed busy, and of course the local operator, PT Modern International, they made plans to expand the chain's reach outward from Jakarta. So what's happened now, according to this article, is that bureaucracy has come and kind of like catch out the whole situation.
Hang on a minute. From what I understand, then they operated the chain originally using a restaurant license.
That's the thing. So then the tourism, the trade ministry kind of like stepped in because they said, you know, if it is a restaurant license, then, you know, why are you selling consumer goods?
Right.
So it comes down to that whole hangout habit by the Indonesians. You know, so they stick around there, they free Wi-Fi, they buy a drink, and then they bring out their laptops.
Because I've seen some 7-Elevens around right now with, they do have a couple of chairs where you can actually sit down and have your drink it as well. So maybe they started on that concept and it was easier to get that license that way.
I mean, it's like if you look at the 7-Eleven model in different in Thailand, for example, it's very different to here.
Japan,
China as well. China's the place where you can literally have a meal in 7-Eleven. So I can see, you know, why they've taken that model, because they've seen it elsewhere and thought, well, if it works there, why can't we do it here?
Yeah, but then again, you know, the government got involved and was like, if you're running this chain on a restaurant license, but then you're also selling consumer goods, you're operating for 24 hours. They needed all this to be reported to them, and I think it was. But then also you got to think about the local operator, Internacional. They also had to report any changes to the franchise owners abroad. So that was one issue. And then after that, I did a bit more digging, right? And there were a couple of other theories why 7-Eleven just didn't work in Indonesia. So the stores were always crowded, but the customers never actually bought much. They just came to hang out, enjoy the Wi-Fi. They bring their laptop. But then
I'll be there.
Yeah, but just one drink, right? So how profitable is that? And then there's also fierce competition from Alphamart and Indomaret, which are the local chains, each with a longer history and a bigger network in the country. And also from street food stalls where you can actually lepa longer and enjoy like
I wonder if this is the first, you know, for 7-Eleven.
Yeah,
because it'd be interesting to find out as well. And I'm sure they'll come back. Really left a taste.
It feels like squeezed out almost, you know, finding any little bit of bureaucracy to kind of push them out. That's how it feels.
Yeah. Oh, one other point, right? In 2015, there was this nationwide ban on alcohol sales at mini markets, so I guess that didn't help the situation at 7E there as well.
Yeah, that's not a help, is it? Okay, moving along. This is an interesting story, and one that I can kind of really enjoy. It's about the surprising trigger that makes you buy cleaning products, all based on psychology, right? Now, I am one of those people that will go into any kind of supermarket or whatever, and I will always end up walking away with some kind of new cleaning product. And I've often questioned myself, why do I do this, right? And I look underneath my sink, and there's plenty of products. I really shouldn't need to buy anything for an awful long time.
You know what I do? I don't normally go to grocery stores. I get them delivered. I do online shopping.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't have that problem.
Right, but this is almost like an impulse buy. Right? Yeah. Most people will buy chewing gum or they'll buy a drink. I end up buying like Clorox or something, and I don't know why. But a recently published research in the Journal of Consumer Research details a series of experiments that analyzed how a perceived loss of control changes the way we shop. So people who feel like they've lost control of their environment buy more cleaning products, stationery, painkillers, and skimmed milk.
Don't you just buy more in general? Isn't it called retail therapy?
What I thought. But when I read into it, what it says is like being low control isn't a feeling or a character trait, but rather the way in which you perceive the world around you. So let's say you get annoyed with being stuck in a traffic jam, or somebody has annoyed you by jumping the queue, or you've had to wait too long at the bank. These things that are completely out of your control, the way in which you deal with that, some people, is to buy cleaning products or products that have some kind of utilitarian use, things like tools and screwdrivers. The idea is, if you could do this, if you were building something like a DIY store at the side of a highway where you know people are being stuck in traffic, you know for a fact people will come in there and buy this stuff. So this really made me look at myself and think, how much of my life do I feel as though isn't in control?
This feels like a personal development session. So
this is what it's like.
So Richard,
come on, Frieda, tell
me. So Richard, why are you feeling that you have no control?
I don't know. It's the traffic. It must be the traffic, surely. But this was done by a bunch of people over in Singapore. So it's an interesting little research piece. It's from this guy called Andy Yap and Charlotte Chen. And they wrote it in an article for INSED Business School. Here's a quote from them. A loss of control doesn't mean being out of control or lacking self-discipline. It refers to the everyday fundamental experience of being unable to produce a desired outcome in a given environment. Such situations could include traffic jams or long queues at the till, especially in overcrowded stores. It also describes what a parent typically feels when dealing with a child who throws a tantrum in a supermarket.
What's that called again? Pester power.
Pester power, yeah. I want, yeah. I think it boils down to, Frieda, the fact that my cats will not do anything that I ask them to do, and I have to constantly clean my apartment.
Get a dog.
This is why, yeah, I should probably get a dog. Right, we're going to take a very short break. We've got some Jimmy Eat World up next with Sweetness. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Business, football, music. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. We started off with how 7-Eleven are collapsing over in Indonesia. Excuse me, not exactly a motivational story to kick us off with. We then moved on to the surprising trigger that can make you buy cleaning products.
And Rich's OCD habits.
And my OCD habits. And then, of course, we are now going to be talking about buying your first home, or five things that you could learn when buying your first home.
So, yeah, this was it. I need to get Audrey involved in this because she's just in the midst of, you know, moving into her new home. My story was a couple of years ago when it was easy, you know, to get a loan and that sort of thing. But it's a very interesting, and I guess some people who are moving into their homes right now. And there were five things, right? And no surprises there, right? When they say, you know, move in ready isn't real. Right? Your home is ready. No, it isn't.
It never is.
Right? What was your experience like, Otz?
Like, even if you buy a fully furnished home, you still have to think about things like, I don't know, blinds for privacy, possibly, more storage.
Shower screens,
things like that. Or, you know, if anti-slip mats, if you live with elderly parents, or baby-proofing your home, you know, things like that, right? So the house is just never ready to just move in.
Yeah.
I always kind of understood as well, when you rent property here as well, you know, you get the fully furnished kind, it's never fully furnished.
Never
Never, never is, no.
You still need plates, you still need...
Right.
Utensils. I don't know.
Although I think I struck gold on this recent one that I when I moved it, it was literally everything was there.
But that's the thing as well, because if you move from another home, you'd have some things as well, and you say, oh, maybe I don't need this, I don't need that, and or you have double or something here. So in this case here, the first thing he said, the shower didn't have a door.
Yes.
There was no washer and dryer, of course. You know, the kitchen faucet didn't have hot water. The back steps were slippery. The bedroom windows didn't have screens.
See?
And as you were saying, like all these things that come around with it, you know. The second one, which is very important, shop around for a mortgage before getting pre-approved, which is probably not a very, you know, the story right now is not easy to get a loan anyway. But for that, you don't wait until the last minute and then after that start looking for someone who'll give you a loan, because once they make the announcement, you say, oh, I didn't have time to do the homework.
So like if you're actually buying a home from a developer or if you're buying a home from an agent, they will have like, oh, you know, preferred banks to go to. But you should always shop around. Let me tell you this, because sometimes when you even tell the banks that you're shopping around, they will actually give you better interest rates.
Right.
First hand knowledge here, I know. And also don't forget to think about things like MRTA. That's optional. So these are the kind of things you should be thinking about.
Right. I mean, when I remember in England when I bought my house, my first house, it was very, very simple. I went and spoke to a solicitor and said, look, I'm interested in buying this property. Please help me out. He literally did everything for me. It was a one-stop shop. But
and,
like you said,
he gave you a good deal.
It was
right?
a good deal.
But
yeah.
then you had to pay the solicitor.
I did have to
which
pay the solicitor,
fine.
Which is fine.
If there's a one stop, because it's never a one stop shop. Oh, you got to deal with this person and that person, that sort of thing. So it's never that easy. So you really have to, you know, and you can do that bargaining thing. Like, no, X Bank gave me this land, right? So,
but then it's just an endless WhatsApp conversation with like three different people from three different banks.
So which sort of kind of leads to the next point. You know, no one cares more about your money than you do, and how, you know, in that process of getting your home loan or getting all these things, right, there are so many people looking through the process, right?
Yeah.
And then after that you say, oh, and there's more money slipping out than you expected initially. So you've got to be very careful about that.
You've got to really keep your eye on your money.
Yes, and the other thing is always look out for errors, because the onus is on you. Because you might think, okay, I've got a lawyer working on this, I've got the developer looking at this, I've got my agent. But then again, the onus is on you. Because what happened with me was the home address on our SPA was wrong.
Oh.
Huh?
Yes. I could have actually bought a different unit altogether.
I've had my IC number wrong twice.
Have you?
Yeah. Mm. I was like, hello, not this one. And then when they got the IC right, they got my name wrong.
Right.
So these are little fine print.
I've heard not Beijing. I think it was, about a new property that went up and a whole bunch of people bought properties in this, you know, this apartment block. And it turned out that a lot of those people's addresses were, in fact, muddled up. So they'd ended up buying the wrong properties. And then once they were in, of course, the people who were supposed to be buying the properties were like, hey, you're in my house and I'm in your house. And the hassle that they had to go through to just actually move around was quite difficult, apparently.
Mm.
Yeah, check all the details, I guess.
Yes, being meticulous here is the way to go.
And the next one is that negotiating isn't scary. I don't know about that. I'm sure you're having some renovation works done at your place as well.
Yeah. What negotiation can take place there? You know, they just tell you how much it costs and then you just have to, okay, take my money.
Either say yes or no, I'll find something else.
Did you shop around?
Yes, you know, but then again, sometimes for convenience or you want someone to just get everything done all together, having to shop around and work with different contractors for different things around the house, that is also time-consuming.
And you're tired and you're irritable and you're just like, look, just get it done, do whatever it costs in the end, right? Kind of, I suppose.
And I like the final one. The neighbors know everything.
So true.
Oh, this is so true.
Are you friends with your neighbors, though?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am. I have two or three very close friends on the same floors where we live. And
brilliant.
They were the ones who actually recommended people to do our fittings, recommended what kind of flooring or, you know, like where the sun beats in and how thick curtains you need. You know, those were just like the bare necessity because it's a new building. But imagine if you're moving into a neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
You want to know what the crime rate is like, you know, if the security is good enough, how often they come and clean, if you're your Rukun Tetangga is active, you know, things like that. That's the kind of information that you need to see whether this neighborhood is meant for you.
Right. So even if you don't know anyone, just knock on the neighbor's door and just say, so who did you use? You know, I mean, why not? You've got to make friends with your neighbors anyway.
Even if it's little things like, you know, where's the nearest convenience store, the nearest ATM?
Do you have extra sugar?
Do you have extra sugar? Yes, that's a good one. I've not heard that in so many years, actually. And it's funny you say that, because just a couple of years ago, my neighbor did that. Mm. Anyway, we should probably move on, Frida, you cheeky little thing. Right, if you want to get in touch, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Of course, we are on Twitter at BFM Radio. Up next, a little bit of Guns N' Roses. Welcome to the jungle. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be faithful, men. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury with...
Frida Liu
and
Andrew Raj.
If you want to get in touch with the show, get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio, or you can get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Now, we've been speaking a lot. In fact, Jeff's probably spoke about it a lot more than we have, about the Internet of Things, right?
IoT.
IoT. So to put it simply, it's the interconnection via the Internet of computing devices in everyday objects, enabling them to send and receive data.
Basically, now you know.
Basically, if it's got an on and off switch, and it can connect to the internet, then it's part of the Internet
of Things.
When you
can start speaking to your fridge.
Right.
And yes.
Speaking to your fridge and 3D printers and all of this kind of stuff.
Getting your fridge to order your groceries, having it delivered to you.
There you go.
And then, because that's the fridge, because I'm thinking about the thing under your...
Yeah, I need like a cleaning product ordering service. So I need something underneath my sink. But anyway, so for me, this seems as like the kind of next stage progress of what we're doing and where we're going, of course. Right? You know, we have the internet. We all got used to using that. And everybody knows how to use the internet now. In fact, there are some people in this studio who are around who have only ever been around when the internet has been
around. I know.
Which is a scary prospect. But now, the whole Internet of Things, Singaporean polytechnics are offering a specialist diploma in the Internet of Things, which apparently will equip participants with the range of skills in keeping with the spectrum of needs across various IoT deployments. So the course is primarily aimed at professionals with work experience in related industries, as well as more recent diploma or degree level graduates. My question is, do we really need a diploma to learn about the Internet of Things?
It's a 300-hour course,
right?
I'm just thinking, what are they learning?
Right. This was the thing. When I first read this article, I mean, they're not the only... this is from the Republic Polytechnic who are offering this course. There's a couple more who do it. Temasek are doing it, and a couple more as well. It's something very similar. But this is all part with this part of the Singaporean government's smart nation ambitions, right? But it just feels like they're throwing money away.
Okay, is it for... the older generation?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
that would make sense, right?
Older meaning 35 and above.
35 and above, yeah. Those people who haven't been around.
So. But it says here the course is primarily aimed at professionals with work experience in related industries, as well as, degree level graduates.
Right.
So they're actually looking at
the
people who are already working, your mid-level executives, or the young ones out of...
I mean, I don't know if I'm reading into it wrong, but it feels as though this is kind of one of those courses that just exists for the purpose of existing.
Or is it a course to, you know, expose people to the possibilities of what the Internet of Things can do?
Possibly,
you know, because this is I know Singapore has a direction where they're very much focused on the STEM courses, and then they move towards the arts, promoting the arts, because they realized that they were lacking these kind of things. And one of my nieces actually is in a school, and they have afternoon classes, and it's a regular school where they have ballet classes, and they put an emphasis on that. And maybe it's just sort of getting people ready on the possibilities of what the internet can do to just add on from the education system that they were used to it. And I'm thinking it must be the older
ones.
Yeah.
Just to clarify what the syllabus could possibly contain, Republic Polytechnic said that the diploma students will gain hands-on experience with industry-standard technologies such as specialized sensors and exposure to industry projects on IoT, especially smart city applications. But with something like IoT, right, it's going to be ever-changing, if you think about it, right?
It is.
Everything's going to just keep upgrading itself.
Yep.
It's just going to keep improving. So
the idea of smart cities and all of that kind of stuff, you know, Singapore seems to be that kind of hotbed and the ideal place to be doing it, I guess. I mean, I suppose if they're getting in at this stage and they're educating people at a younger age, if they're talking about people who have just graduated, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. Mm. Tell us what you think. 018-789-8899. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we've got one final... Oh, no, we don't have any more stories. We've got events to talk about.
Yes.
We've got something very special coming up, haven't we? Right, time for a short break. A little bit of Beck with The New Pollution. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Benchmark for Managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with Audrey Raj and Frida Liu. Oh, sorry, Frida. Do you want to do that? Go on.
Frida Liu.
There you go. So we've got through our stories today. We're going to talk to you about some of the events that are coming up over the next few days that you might want to check out. So then, Audrey.
Yes, so the first one is called Building a Database. This is happening this Wednesday, the 5th of July, starting at 10 a.m. all the way to lunchtime, 12:30. It's happening at Atas 59 in Bangsa. So Get Response is partnering with a digital agency, Naga DDB Tribal, to answer questions about building a database and generating leads with digital marketing platforms. So basically, you cover how to build an integrated digital marketing campaign and how you can integrate your lead generation activities with email marketing. So some of their main guests is Nick Radzi, Director of Creative and Technology of Naga DDB Tribal, and Melissa Lee, Head of Get Response Malaysia. And if you're wondering if you should attend this, this event is especially for advertisers or marketers who want to learn the tips and tricks of digital marketing. Tickets are priced at just RM20 with breakfast and free flow of drinks. But you have to RSVP, and to do that, you can go to grtalks4.gr8.com. So that's, I guess, greattalks4@great.com.
Interesting email address or a website address.
Yeah.
Okay, coming up on Saturday and Sunday, the 8th and 9th of July, it is the first ASEAN Sikh Economic and Entrepreneurship Summit that's happening at the Securities Commission Malaysia in Bukit Kiara. So it's a flagship initiative by a group of young Sikh professionals aiming to enable economic upliftment and integration for ASEAN Sikhs while unifying and empowering the Sikh business community of the region. The inaugural summit will also hold the ASEES startup competition, where ideas and visions for the future will stand a chance to receive attractive prizes. So who will be there? Some of the key speakers are Manpreet Singh, the finance minister of Punjab, Dr. Montek Singh Alawalia, who is an international economic advisor, Surinder Singh Kandahari, who's the owner and chairperson of the Al Daboi Group, Sunita Kaur, the managing director for Asia Spotify,
and maybe Jeff Sandhu.
And of course, Jeff Sandhu will be there on one of the panels as well. So wondering if you should go. Members of the Sikh business community should head over, especially SME business owners, investors, C-level executives and of MNCs and people involved with startup companies. Tickets are RM349. To buy tickets and for more information, head over to aseansc.com.
And the next event, one of the most important events, which is the Enterprise Takeaways, happening next Thursday, July 13, and that's from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Connection in Nexus Bangsa South. You know, of course, this is our third year that we're doing it, and it's keeping the love alive. And I think this is one of the things that people in the F&B industry, you get into the business, and then it's the business, and then it's how do I, and it's tiring, so how do you keep the love alive? So we got some key speakers there. We've got Chef Kevin Cherkas from Kuka Bali, Isadora Chai. I think a lot of people in Malaysia would know her. Chef Margarita Forrest, and she, of course, is Asia's best female chef for 2016.
Wonderful.
And they've been in business for a long time, so they're going to be talking about that. The other people that we're going to have there, we've got McDonald's talking about people to Holstein Milk, to My Burger Lab, and we've also got the CEO of Damakan coming along to talk about tech. And I think when we talk about tech, apart from, you know, the whole aspect of delivery and food waste management, which is a big issue with F&B, because typical restaurant would lose about 10 to 15%. But what they've done with the delivery through the use of tech and algorithms, they've kept it down to 5%.
Brilliant.
You know, so that's sort of thing that you'll be able to learn there. So get your tickets at bfm.my/takeaway. all meals included for the day, breakfast, lunch, coffee, right? And that's go and get your tickets now.
All right.
All right.
What do we have coming up after the news then, Audrey?
Yes, of course, it's the Breakfast Grill replay. Anthony Lee, chairman of General Insurance Association of Malaysia and the CEO of AIG Malaysia, he was on the grill today. With the gradual liberalization of motor and fire insurance tariffs by Bank Negara over the last year or so, and the second phase just kicking off on July 1st of the de-tariffication regime, the Morning Run spoke to Anthony about the impact of this de-tariffication for insurance providers and consumers.
Wonderful. Right, ladies, thank you very much for joining me here in the studio today. On behalf of myself, Audrey Raj, and Frida Liu, it's the end of Enterprise Biz Minds. We will be back, of course, tomorrow, same time, same place, from deepest, darkest Bandar Utama. It has been Enterprise Biz Minds. I've been Rich Bradbury. You are, of course, still listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.